nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Two announcements. To remind you that the presentations will be next Tuesday, this coming Tuesday and Thursday, in the same room where we had it last time in Stu. You guys remember? Exact same room, the exact same time. For the people at Crane, my understanding is that Ron Suderman is setting it up, and to the way, at least as far as I understand it, it's going to be also in the same room. If there are any changes, he will communicate that, right? But in principle, it's this exact same dynamics, okay? There will also be, for every Purdue side of the presentation, there will be a Crane side of the presentation, okay? The second announcement, I owe you a bunch of homework. You can drop by to pick it up starting tomorrow around 9 a.m. I have finished almost all of them. I think there's still a couple of you that owe me at least one homework. I guess the awkward thing was that for every homework, there was at least one of you that hadn't submitted it. Since I gave a lot of leeway for you guys to practice, then I wasn't able to return it until all the homework were back, right? But now the semester's over, so I'm gonna return it, okay? Please drop by tomorrow, and I'll be happy to give you your stack of homework, okay? Any questions? Any questions regarding organization? Oh, and for the people at Crane, I'm hoping to be sending you, via Ron Studerman or directly, also your individual homework, okay? Also graded, okay? Any questions that you may have? No questions. Okay. No questions. Okay. So this is what we were talking about last time. Okay. If you guys remember, let me just animate the whole slide. I think that's the whole slide. Okay. We were talking about the lithium iron phosphate system and how for the system is a technologically very relevant because for high power density applications, it delivers a higher rate, a higher current for on a flat, very nice flat voltage as compared to other systems that we have been discussing. Structurally or from the material science point of view, it's very interesting. Can I go there? Apparently I can't connect with this one, so I'm going to point out from here. So in this case, you have a two-phase system where the lithiated phase coexists with a delithiated phase. However, for high C rates, what happens is that you don't allow enough time for the system for phase separation to occur. And instead, you get a uniform lithiation, right? But in principle, you have a lithiated and non-lithiated phase. And as you can see from the slide, right, the lithium ions are filling in this case, the interstices of the tetrahedrons, as you can see there. Right? And it populates the lattice. Now, from there, we discuss the methodology to describe that. We were saying, well, basically, we have the exact same equations we've been describing before, the exact same equilibrium, type of equilibrium potentials and transport along the porous electrolyte. The only difference is that, well, as compared to before, first we had our separator and our cathode, and before we were just injecting into a representative particle current or lithium if you prefer at the edge. In this case, now we also have to track the motion of an internal interface as the system lithiates. Okay? And from there, it was proven that this shell structure work to describe what happens in this battery. I think everyone is very excited about that. There are other techniques now that have been developed in order to describe this much more accurately. Why? Because, now we have had a chance to look more carefully at what happens inside the systems. As you can see, battery particles, and we have been very conscious about that assumption, right? Battery particles are not necessarily, and very rarely, they are spherical particles. In this case, they have this, well, I find them very beautiful shapes. Let me try to draw one here in three dimensions to get an idea on what it actually is expected to look. This specific system, and it has been, in this case, developed or worked to the death, so it's very well characterized now. So it will look something like this. Right, so, well, if you do have a region that it's being, that is diffusing in, it certainly will not be the way we were intending. In fact, when people started to look microscopically, gave a much more closer look, and this particular micrograph has become very, very popular, you can see actually that actually the lithium distribution does not occur in that, you know, a shell-like method. Instead, you can see there the lithium bands, right? How the system, instead of lithiating the way it was initially proposed by Newman, and I'm sorry, not by Newman, by Goodenough, you have these layers, these lithiated layers of material in the system. In fact, the spacing of these layers is very well defined. It's very periodic, as you can see, and the structure that you see on your left is one that has been just lithiated in for one cycle, right? So again, you have your LiFePO4 interleaved with FePO4 bands. What is interesting, though, and that's what is interesting on the inset on the right, is that after several cycles, particles stop looking like that, and they start looking more like what you see on the right. In this case, on the left, you can almost see the rows of atoms, but on the right, it just becomes much more disordered. Basically, and actually you can see there is somewhere in the middle, like there's a crack. There's a giant gap that crosses right through the center. And trying to understand why that happens, or whether or not that's important, basically people started to realize that for low C rates, and this is why this material is very good for high C rate applications and very bad for low C rate applications. For high C rate applications, these bands never have time to form when the particle size is small enough. Okay, why? Because you don't give the system the opportunity to phase separate. Phase separation gets frustrated. Okay, in this case. But when you give it enough time to phase separate, the lattice parameter of this structure is very incompatible, let's say. There's a lattice parameter difference, very large parameter difference with respect to the unlithiated phase. And as a result of that, this layer is going to expand at a different rate than the lithiated layer. So really effectively, every platelet becomes a multi-layered structure. So you have highly compressive regions interleaved with highly tensile regions. So it shouldn't be surprising that crack that you have in the middle of the platelet is a result most likely of a highly lithiated region being in contact with in an unlithiated region. And after a couple of cycles, a gap happens, a crack develops between them. Basically, think of it as in terms of multilayers, basically you start having internal delamination of the particles. Okay? Well, in that case, turns out to be important, right? Because you want your battery to survive, right? For long periods of time. You want it to at least last 2 years. If we're talking about, I don't know, a laptop, right? Or a cell phone, right? How often do you change a cell phone, right? That's probably how often you would like to think about your battery. In a car, you probably want to go for 10 years, right? But I think you get the idea there. And well, there's a lot of interesting features there too, because I see also at least the randomness of the shades on the inset on the right also gives me the impression that might be even some amorphization, right? There's clearly a lot of large mechanical or chemically induced mechanical work in the system, which may have some impact on the response. And well, this is just one piece of the puzzle, right? I want to show you a little bit more as to people actually started to see. So how important this is, well, it depends on how this was done. So people started to, well, we're running at low C rates the response of our cell. And this is, at this point, we can read very well this slide now because, well, here you have 15% of carbon black, and we know carbon black is 4, right? Carbon black is for improving the conductivity of in the electrolyte. We have 75% of LiFePO4. In this case, they're using PVDF as the salt, right? And ECDMC 1:1 for the electrolyte, and they also use, LiPF6 as the salt and the separator. As we have also discussed, we spent some time on this, right? They have a tri-layer polypropylene, polyethylene, polypropylene layer, right? And that's the battery that they were experimentally characterizing. And it was very interesting to see that what they found is that in the big plot of voltage versus capacity, what you have is the voltage in the first cycle. You can see we go all the way up to 140 milliamps per gram in the first cycle. Okay? After 10 cycles, I'm starting to drop, but you can see after 60 cycles, I've already lost a lot of capacity. I've gone from roughly 150 to below 120 milliamp hours per gram. Okay? If I only saw that plot by itself, oh, and of course that is during discharge. During recharge, you can see that actually I reach the highest voltage or my cutoff recharge voltage before I have to stop, right? Suggesting that there's a degradation mechanism. Without having seen the previous slide and looking at the inset, the first thing that comes to mind is maybe there's some SEI formation, right? That maybe there's some additional losses, some maybe side reactions occurring in the system that is actually impacting the performance. So you can see here, right, that after 50s, well, in this case, think about, 60 cycles is eventually effectively 2 months of usage discharging your cell once a day, right? Fully discharge and then recharge. So the first thing that's come to mind is, well, there are these additional things going on. And in fact, people said, well, let's just look at the crystal structure. Maybe it has amorphosized. Maybe something happened in the system. But it turns out that if you look at it at the X-ray diffraction, you can see that before cycling, you can see the X-ray diffraction pattern, how it looks. After 10 cycles, after 30 cycles, there's no effect, right? So clearly, if there is any phase transitions induced in the structure of the battery material, that's not it, right? That's not what's going on. This is not catching it, okay? So instead, what people did is reran these same experiments, but then they started to show what happens for every single individual particle. In this case, these are some micrographs showing you what happens in the battery in those particles after applying different cycles. So you can see at the top corner how the particles look beautiful. They look fully dense. After one discharge or no cycling whatsoever, you can see after 10 cycles on the top right corner, right, there's not much going on. You can kind of see, if you squint your eyes, you can kind of see a hair type of crack going through the center of that particle. I don't know if you can see that, right? But really, there doesn't seem to be much going on. But you can see what happens after 30 cycles, okay? And finally, after 60 cycles, clearly, there's some failure that is the mechanical failure, that these large volumetric changes is impacting in some way the capacity of the cell. How is it impacting it? Right, and again, what we have here is our particle, And what we know is that lithium and electrons are coming from the surroundings. And if I do it several times, I will develop these domains that will grow and they will shrink, right? And the domains will expand at a different rate as compared to the unlithiated material. And we will develop an internal crack. How is that crack affecting capacity?
Okay.
It's affecting diffusion into the particle. In what way? Just to play devil's advocate, okay, you're in the right track, but just to play devil's advocate, didn't we define porosity as all these other things surrounding it? So basically, I have lithium going around it like this. So my porosity is really not changing. And I'm trying to say here, the porosity imposed by the active material is not changing. I mean, it's changing a little bit in the sense that the particles are expanding a little bit and contract, but I don't think it's enough really to impact the effective tortuosity of the cell. It seems that you have a comment there.
Yes, but when you say lithium interpolates faster, it's because of the surface area that's increased.
Say that again?
The surface area has increased for the particle, that's why it should be interpolating faster.
It should be, you're saying that, okay, just so that the people at Crane can hear it too. So that because a crack forms, I have more open, more exposed area, which will in turn allow for more lithium to come in. That's an interesting hypothesis. I haven't thought about that, but if we think about it, I mean, let's look at particle two, right? Let's just try to draw a cross section of that, where I have basically this polymeric, maybe gel type of electrolyte surrounding it. Right, and then I cut there a crack. It won't get in. It won't flow. Very unlikely it will flow in. That's my crack. Almost, I mean, it looks like Pac-Man, but it's my crack. Okay. You're right to say that the conductivity and the diffusivity is going to be affected. Right. I mean. We have also agreed that even though for a spherical particle, lithium will come in on directions, in these particles, especially this type of particle, lithium will come in all directions but will not diffuse uniformly. Right? Not only that, diffusivity in this system is highly anisotropic, right? This is not an isotropic crystal structure, right? It actually has a large degree of anisotropy, right? We were saying it was a one-dimensional material. You guys remember that? That it was one axis through which it diffuses the fastest. So even in this case, let's just try to draw for this specific particle high diffusion direction, right? So if I cut it in this way, right, you can see that I will be able to, in this direction, diffusion will not be affected, but in this direction, it will be. Right? Or if my crack actually is having an angle here, let me just draw a crack right there, it will impact diffusion in the sense that stuff will come down this route, and it will actually have to flow through the edge of the crack because it cannot jump back out, right? This entire gap is completely isolated so that it can actually access this back of the material, right? Effectively, dropping the capacity. So, I guess the point that I'm trying to make here is that crack formations in these battery material, what it's going to do is going to drop the capacity because you will make part of your material inaccessible. Okay, that's on that end. Think about, besides the fact that internally it's going to be isolated, when you were saying that it also decreases the diffusivity, it also decreases the conductivity because, see, this gel that I have managed to open up a gap against, well, now if stuff is going to diffuse in here, I actually have to open this gap, right? And you know that when something detaches, it not just detaches like that, right? I mean, I'm sure you've seen that you can have these, like, giant pockets of detach material, right? This particle is expanding, right? Let me just try to make here a thought experiment, right? You have here a particle that, let's just say, it uniformly expands. Okay, let's just pretend for a second that there are internally no diffusion limitations, right? The particle uniformly expands, moving polymer out, right? Then it contracts. Again, I'm going to try to outline this exact same shape, but now it contracts. So you can think of it as basically pulling itself in, right? It could completely detach itself from its surroundings, so it could ultimately end up looking something like this, right? Where you have a gap between the particle and the surroundings. Now you have this gap of electrolyte, and the only way you can bring lithium is through whatever remains in touch, right, in contact. So effectively, you can make this whole region completely isolated, so it's much easier for lithium to just diffuse around it and continue its process to the next particle, assuming that the next one is contacted too. Right, so let me just go back one slide. Here, so when after 60 cycles have passed, I have lost at this point more than 30 milliamp hours per gram. And after having lost that much in 60 cycles, it means that things like this have happened, okay, and things like these has happened too. They're both now contributing negatively to the Coulombic efficiency of the system. So now it adds a whole other layer of complexity to battery design, because now you not only want to engineer for capacity, for diffusion, for reactivity, and for ohmic losses, you also want to engineer so that it doesn't crack. Okay? Of course, this is the lithium iron phosphate system, right? But there are other systems out there that do the same thing. I want to talk about them. This is just a close-up of the same particle. And you can see that, at least in this particular particle, it really gives the impression that it is following specific crystallographic planes, right? Suggesting that it really wants to crack on some specific mode, followed or specified not only by the crystal structure of the system, but in the way in which lithium is coming into the system. Okay, so I'm not intending here to make a class or a lecture on fracture mechanics, I'm just going to highlight qualitatively what is expected in this system, right? So in the case of these materials, there are so many possibilities on how a battery can crack. I just talked about two, but for example, you can have two particles, for example, that together could locally open up the electrolyte to the point in which locally they could completely debond, right? That's an obvious one. When we also know that particles themselves are not single crystals by themselves, they actually have an internal structure. In the battery community, they're calling these internal grains, they're calling them right now primary particles. Okay, the internal grains, and of course the composite giant objects are the secondary or larger overall particles, right? And when you look at that, each of those internal particles is going to expand at its own rate, right? And if you think about it, it makes sense, because this particle over here is gonna be expanding in some direction, and this one will do it at its own rate. So after it's lithiated, it will look something, I don't know. It'll get all deformed, right, based on its anisotropy, right? And as a result of that, you should expect large stresses at grain corners and boundaries, right? That is something to be expected, right? And as a result of that, then you should expect that cracks could form at grain boundaries, propagate in, right, at the junction between two internal primary particles, inducing with that local internal detachment. And that internal detachment will also raise the resistivity, the internal resistivity of the particle, will also decrease the internal diffusivity of the system. And with that, you will lose also capacity, right? Your Coulombic efficiency will come down again. Okay? So, then you have to look at and again, I'm not intending for this to be a direction for everyone to just add that to the report. It would be great if you say something about that if it's relevant, right? But the point is that it can get very complicated because you need to account now for the local state of stress in each and every single particle. Why? Because every particle, as you can see there in the inset, some orientations are going to be more prone to fracture than others, and the way the randomness in which that particle was assembled will impact on how that crack is going to propagate. Okay? Now, what do we have? What are the tools that we have to describe that? Well, there's already a theory of fracture mechanics to describe that. In this case, there's this thing called, the Griffith criterion, where the critical energy for fracture, and I'm just going to write it here, the free energy or the energy accumulated in order to crack something is going to be given by some geometrical parameter z. Times, in this case, the stress that specific part is subjected to, right? We will need to specify the functional form of this. Right? That's, in this case, think about it, that the stress is induced because of the lithiation or the lithiation process, okay? And in this case is the strain. Either strain because it contracts, because it expands, or because you apply a mechanical load to it. Okay? And that's the crack size. Okay? There's a whole body of literature that leads to this equation. So this equation has been, in that sense, carefully thought out, where you solve the stresses about a crack tip, right? And from there, you find what the critical stress or the leading term of the stress expansion is, and from there you calculate how much that you can characterize the stress of the tip with from a number like this. Okay, and you can relate this number. You can see that the stress to a first approximation is the Young modulus times the strain. So then you can relate the strain and the strength of the system, okay, I'm sorry, the Young modulus of the system and the crack size to how much energy you have accumulated, okay? Now, if you associate or equate that number that we have just created to the surface tension, right, how much energy is necessary to create that internal interface, if G overcomes the energy to create surface, okay, then I'll form a crack. Okay, and well, this is basically the in a 5 minute span the entire Griffith theory. So I'm not saying that you should take it lightly, right? I'm saying that there's a lot under the hood here that if you really want to dive into this, you should read carefully. I'll post a couple of handouts so that if you're interested in following that path, you can indeed learn more about it. Okay? But basically, this is what happens, right? Somehow, well, we need to find an expression for the strain that will allow us to make that assessment. And somehow, the strain has to be related to the local concentration, right? It should be related to the discharge rate, okay? And it should indeed impact the, if we do this right, we should be able to find a way to assess what the geometry of the particle is and what are the bounds for discharge or recharge so that we don't make our battery fail mechanically. Okay? So besides ACI formation, besides salt precipitation, dendrite formation, which I think I just said, right. Besides all these side reactions that we have already described, you also have this additional phenomena that may be occurring in your cell. Okay? Now, this is, I'm just here rehashing next what for lithium iron phosphate has been done for different configurations. On the top left, what you have, and well, before I show that, I should talk about how the strain changes in different direction when from you go from a delithiated system to a lithiated system. The A-axis expands, you can see, by 5%. Okay? The B-axis of our cell, of our unit cell, I'm sorry, expands by 3.7%, and the C-axis actually contracts by almost 2%. So it's like if you have a cube, right, and the A and B direction of that cube basically expand unevenly, and the C direction shrinks, right, when as you put lithium in it. So the direction in which that domain is abutting the unlithiated section will matter to imposing a crack. So what you see here is different values of G, the quantity we just defined, divided by the elastic energy imposed in it times the, in this case, the distance of the domain. Okay? And you can see that you can maximize how that happens depending on what the configuration. In this case, on the upper left corner, what you have is you have an unlithiated domain on the left, a lithiated one on the right, and because along the C-axis, it contracts itself, then you have really a crack there in what it's referring in fracture mechanics as mode 2, right, where one of the sides is contracting and the other one is expanding. In the other one, in this case, the lithium iron phosphate is expanding along the A-axis and on the upper right corner, and as the domain proceeds forward, it's really inducing a compressive stress on the at the tip of the crack. That one, I would say it's a mode 1. And you can see that depending on what the size of the domain is, you can have a critical size where you can maximize the stress on that system, right? And of course, you have the other configuration from the ones that this paper proposes, inducing with that the effect of delamination that we saw at the very beginning of the class, okay? And again, that is something you definitely don't want. Now, this is for lithium iron phosphate, okay, which is a very specific material, but how does that stack with respect to the other materials? Okay, and well, this slide summarizes to a first approximation the volume changes in this type of cell, right? And what you can see here is that the changes in volume, the expansion or contraction, depends effectively on the chemistry, right? For example, you can see lithium iron, lithium cobalt oxide goes, when it's 50% lithiated, it goes from a volume of 1.34 centimeter cube, per ampere hour to 1.31, right? You can see there that actually the system has just contracted, okay? And it contracts, as you can see there, by 2%, okay? Similarly, materials that we've discussed, for example, like lithium manganese oxide on the third row from the bottom, you can see that that one actually expands 7.3%. Okay, lithium iron phosphate, you can see lithium iron phosphate goes and expands volumetrically, because you can see it's really an isotropic, expands all the way to 6.5%. So that's a lot. If you think about it, a 6.5% expansion is a huge amount. You compare that to a typical coefficient of thermal expansion contribution, right? When say you have a piece of glass and you heat it up, this is much more higher per unit, right? And look at graphite, the one that we've been using consistently for all our anodes, right? That's a huge number, right? To a first approximation, we're talking about a 12% expansion. That's huge. That's a very large amount of strain. So then that really makes that wanting this number or this relationship, it's important, right? We really want to know how much that is and how that relates to the state of charge of the system. Okay, so I'm going to do that quick. I don't think I'll need my artistic drawing for a while. So I'm just going to remind you a little bit of guess undergraduate thermodynamics. In this case, we want a strain function, okay, that includes, in this case, the stress of the system, right? Because the strain should depend on how much I stress it, right? I hope you agree with that, right? It should be a thermodynamic variable. It should also depend on the on how much lithium I have put in it, okay? So that should be dependent on that. And it should also depend on if you heat it up or cool it down, right? So I'm going to put it there as a function of temperature as well. Okay, that's the function I'm looking for. Okay? So, well, I can say if I just follow standard thermodynamic practice, right, then that means that my infinitesimal change of strain should be, since I don't know this function at all, I can always expand it in Taylor series or to expand the differential and just identify terms. Okay, this one is at constant composition, at constant stress. This term is at constant temperature and stress. And this term is at constant composition and temperature. So, well, hope it's not too much to ask. But do you remember what that term means physically? The rate at which the system changes shape with temperature, which is a very fancy way of saying? Yes, thermal expansion. So this is the thermal expansion. Okay, you can keep your grade from the class. What about this one? This is the rate of change of, they just say the how the lattice parameter changes shape with composition, right? How the system will deform, will strain when I add more stuff in it and I remove it from it. For people on the solid state community, this has a name already. For the material science people, we basically take names from the other communities, or if they don't exist, we make our own. But you guys know? Daojin? Would you know? Yeah? Anyone? Would you know? No? Okay. Okay, I was not expecting much people to know that one. This one is called, well, in analogy to that one, you can call that one the chemical expansion coefficient. People in the semiconductor community, when silicon, say, expands or contracts when you dope it, they refer to this one because this scientist called Vegard came up with a linear relationship between lattice parameter and composition. It's referred to as and that's how it's been handled in the electrochemistry battery community. Okay? And, well, here we're using alpha for that one. So for this one, we can use beta. And now this one, you should all know this one. What is the rate of change of strain when I apply a stress? Yes, this is actually the inverse of the Young modulus, right? Young modulus. Okay? So, well, if we really want that function, I need to integrate that, right? And I guess I can integrate that. Since it's a state function, I can integrate that on any thermodynamic path. I can integrate, as long as it's thermodynamic, I can integrate it. And so I pick to integrate first through temperature, then through composition, and then through stress. And I get that the change of strain is going to be alpha T minus T naught, okay, plus, I call that beta, C minus C naught, plus 1 over E sigma minus sigma naught. Okay, I'm going to make that my initial state of stress, okay, it's going to coincide with the fact that at a composition C naught and a temperature T naught, I should have no stress and no strain. Right? You agree with that? Basically, if I pick these initial temperatures and initial concentrations, then I should not have any stress and I should have no any strain. Okay? So I can just write it that way. Okay? And well, that helps me a lot write this relationship because now I can say what I really wanted is I can just put that one in here and I have the whole thing. Let me just write it in the way I would put it in there. Okay, the problem here is that, well, typically I specify that one, and I get that one out, right? We're typically used to seeing stress as a function of strain, right? Not the other way around, right? So let me just write that just for mental sanity. So if I pass this one to that side, and this one to that side, and then multiply by E, I get sigma to be E times epsilon minus alpha T minus T naught minus beta C minus C naught. Okay? So I have now something that looks just like Hooke's law, right? Stress is proportional to strain, except that now I have a shift. Okay? And that shift is if I heat up my material, technically I can crack it, I guess. Right? For the case of these experiments that I just showed you, well, this term was thrown away. Okay, so it depends. This beta is essentially the numbers that you can see on the last column of this plot. Okay, this is how much lithium I can put in if C naught is zero, if C is one, right, how much I have actually gained strain. How much chemical strain I have gained. So from there, you can see the amount of stress that you can actually put in the system and how the well, not only the Young modulus plays an important role to specifying that, but how we want to really either control this number or somehow find a way to release this quantity in a way that is not a crack. Okay? And of course, if you wanted to use this as an engineering tool, I would take this relationship and put it in here. Okay? If all the strain that results from the lithiation process is converted into stress, basically the system doesn't have a chance to expand, then so a first approximation, you can throw that one out and say that the entire compositional strain is mapped directly into stress, which for a layered, very small system, you can do. Okay? Now, there's a lot much more to it than that, but that's, again, we're trying to define engineering criteria, right, to be able to say something physical about the system. Now, when do you think, given what you know about batteries, that the system should crack sooner? Here, this C corresponds to the amount of lithium that you're putting at the surface of your particles. Okay? So already you know that not every point in the cell is gonna discharge or recharge at the same rate, right? Every point, depending on what the diffusion limitations are, will expand or contract also at different rates. So what would you do? So let's think about that for the next 5 minutes. It's time for a break. And I hope to see your thoughts after the break. We've seen these numbers. So how do we relate that composition to the state of charge? Thoughts. I need your thoughts. What are you thinking?
Is state of charge.
Mm-hmm. Right. See, because see, what we have here is that we have one particle that has a composition C. How do I relate that composition C to the current that I'm putting on it? Because what I really would like is to be able to measure or predict my stress in my particle given the current that I put on it. Right? Do you see that? Right? That's what I would really like to do. If you want to engineer the battery, that's really what you should aim for, right? And, well, it's not the same to have a battery that has a high diffusivity, because if you have a high diffusivity, basically they're all filling up uniformly, right? If the diffusivity is very low, then you have these gradients. Okay? Clearly, this is the situation that you would want, because no gradients means they just expand, and the only stress that you would care is the incompatibility with the surrounding material, right? Or if it touches another particle and that particle has a different state of charge, then it will push it or it will stretch it. Or if you have several of them pushing on a central one, it could also crack it, right? I mean, there are all sorts of other configurations, right? But I think if you look at a single particle level, this is the most likely situation, right? Where you have a ring of material that is expanding at a higher rate than the surroundings. Okay, that's right. And so how do I, the first approximation, how do I relate C to my stress? We already got that, right? We do have that. I wouldn't be asking it if it's something you couldn't do. How are thoughts?
How do we relate C to stress?
How to relate, well, we can relate C to stress to that equation, right? But what we really want to do is relate concentration to current, the current that is coming in at the interface. How do I do that? Yes? Yeah, exactly. We use the Butler-Bomer relationship. I'm going to put it, since this was just part of the derivation, I'm going to put it here. Have my particle, right? Stuff is coming through the edges, right? And I know some I naught that is a function of concentration, right? We know that. And some function over the overpotential, which we know what that is, right? This, for a symmetric reaction, this is a hyperbolic sign. And this one goes typically as reaction constant times F times C to the alpha 1 and CT minus C to the alpha 2, where alpha 1 plus alpha 2 is 1. Okay, and this, right, let's just think of my particle as a volume element of material, right? And all I'm trying to do here is make you think about it, right? Is if my entire particle is gaining that lithium, okay, so, well, if I multiply that by the area of the system, the surface area of the particle, then this should give me really the average accumulation rate of that specific particle, right? So now I managed to come up with a little differential equation, right? Because now this C is related internally to the other C, right? So either I can solve that analytically or numerically, and I can talk about how my lithium is coming into the system, how it's actually coming into the particle. How it is distributed inside, then you would have actually to solve for the stress equation in that system. There are analytical solutions for stresses in spherical systems. Okay? So all the stuff, and this is a big hint, right? All the stuff that you know, or that all the literature out there on thermal stresses applies directly to this problem. Okay? And there should be at least, 90 years of literature where thermal shock literature would apply to this. In this case, we don't have a thermal shock. In this case, we have a chemical shock or an electrochemical shock. Okay? And just to give you an idea, at least a more qualitative idea of what that means, I'm just going to skip that slide. But this is a 2D simulation of lithium coming into circular particles. This is a 2D simulation. And you can see the particles in the front have less lithium. Have more lithium than the particles in the back. In fact, the particles in the back have steep gradients of lithium. Okay? And the microstructures on the left. Okay? And this is lithium manganese oxide, so they're effectively expanding uniformly in all directions. Okay? And as that happens, going to try to make the qualitative picture of here. You have a concentration gradient across it, meaning that the material outside, this material is trying to expand. The material inside in the very core also wants to expand, okay, but the material on the edges is trying to expand faster. Why? Because the concentration gradients are steeper in those regions, okay? So what will happen is that this material is going to expand. This one and it's going to enter, because this one is not expanding in comparison, is going to enter a state of compression. I'm going to put a lot of minuses there. And in order to, because see, it's trying to expand, but it can't, right? Because the core is constraining it. So instead, the core, because the outside part is in compression, the inside part is going to be in tension. Okay? And you've seen that situation before. I have no doubt. I'm sure you've done it, right? Where at least I do this in the summer, especially. I do it a lot, right? I get up in the middle of the night. I go to the kitchen, right? Grab a glass, you know, fill it with ice. Well, not fill it completely, right? But just put two or three cubes of ice, right? Then put some water in it, right? I don't know if you noticed, right, that when you put water on ice, the cubes of ice start to make this noise, like this crackling noise, like crack, crack, crack. I don't know if you've seen that as you pour water in a cube of ice, right? It's the same thing. In this case, you have the surface of the cube of ice expanding because it has gained more thermal energy than the core, right? So effectively, in this case, heat is equivalent to mass flux coming in to our battery material, right? And the particle, the surface is expanding. And the core wants to expand too, but doesn't do it at the same rate, right? Because of, in this case, the heat transport limitations. Okay? So what happens then is that the surface of your cube of ice is going to enter a state of compression, and the core is going to enter a state of tension. And I don't know if you watch this, but, well, at least I've done it for fun, but, I am weird in that sense. I mean, you put a cube of ice, and what you see is that actually the cube of ice, to a first approximation, fractures from the inside out. Why? Because the inside is in tension and the core is in compression. And it's not exactly like that, because the cube of ice itself is made out of really tiny crystallites of ice, right? Of frozen water, right? So it'll find the one spot, the trapped bubble, the grain boundary, melted interface inside the cube of ice that will the stress would reach the critical stress sooner, and it'll go from there. Okay? So the same thing is happening in a battery material, right? It expands on the surface first. Okay? The core will try to compensate for it. Okay? Enter a state of compression and of tension, so a crack will form in the center. Okay, without any phase transformations. I'm not even thinking about phase transformations here. This is just pure is a mechanical balance. And well, the stress calculation here attempts to show those regions on the surface that on the particle, the circular particles that are in compression, while the core, in this case in red, is in tension, showing you that you can truly actually make particles crack during discharge from the inside out. Okay, and well, this could switch when you are looking at a system during recharge, right? Because now I'm actually taking the lithium out, right? And if I take the lithium out, then this picture completely changes, right? Now, if this is during recharge, I have the opposite, right? Now I have lithium being lost on the surfaces, okay? So this region outside is actually contracting. Okay, so if it's contracting, now the surface enters a state of, or the contraction rate is faster than the contraction rate in the core because of the composition gradients. So now the surface is in tension and the core, right, is in compression. Right? And what happens there then, during the recycling cycle, I'm sorry, the recharging cycle, then it will crack from the surface to the inside. So you can see charge discharge, right? You can see the cycling process will induce cracks in one case on the surface and another case in the core, right? And then you really have to be careful at engineering your battery particles. How do I get rid of that effect? Keeping in mind that we're talking about here concentration gradients, right? How do I minimize that? Which is, by the way, how the one of the ways, one of the pluses of what they did for lithium iron phosphate particles. How do I make this situation where I don't have localized regions of stress and of tension and compression next to each other happen? It would be great if the whole particle is in compression. It's terrible if the whole particle is in tension. Ideally, I want, if it does happen, if that stress does happen, I want it in such a way that the critical energy the energy, the mechanical energy that accumulates is never greater than the energy to create a new interface. Okay, that's what you really want. So what do? I can't control that crack size up. That is just part of the processing, right? So this is something that you will always have in your battery. It always has some flaws inside, is what I'm trying to say. Yes. How small do you think I should make it? Yes, you can make a small particle. Yes, you can. But if I made it instead of that big, how small should I make it? How small should I make it? Right. Right, yes. But how much is that in equations? So, this particle is not at steady state, right? You agree with that? So, this particle should be at steady state. I want it at steady state. How do I do that? You guys remember we were talking about here, steady state was defined by using the Fourier number. Right? So if my particle has a size r, and we were just talking about that the previous class too, that I want that the diffusion distance rs, okay, squared goes as d times t, right? So, well, I can define in the same way, right, if this is my diffusion distance, I want it so that given my diffusivity, okay, I allow the system to reach steady state in a very short amount of time, so I always have a uniform distribution of my active material inside. Okay? If I don't have any gradients, then it expands uniformly. Right? If it expands uniformly, there's no internal gradients. There are no internal gradients, there's no stresses, there's no fracture, and my Coulombic efficiency goes up. Okay? Dowgen doesn't seem convinced.
No, I'm just thinking that means that you have to adjust your discharge, your rate of discharge and recharge.
Say that again?
Then you have to adjust your rate of charging and discharging faster than before.
Yes, then my rate of charging and discharging could be faster too. Yes, as long as my particle size is smaller so that diffusion is not the limiting rate, okay, then I can assume each particle to be filling up uniformly. And in that case, then I don't have to also specially resolve the strain, the concentration gradients in the particles. I can assume that each of them is given by this other relationship that we just talked about there. Okay? And that makes it much easier to solve, right? So then you have all the elements to account for the intercalation of every single point in your one-dimensional system. And you don't need a giant three-dimensional model to describe anything, right? You can, in fact, if you do it right, you can arrive to the right conclusion without ever having to run a single calculation in a computer, right? Just by going through numbers like this. okay, which in my opinion could be much more powerful. Understanding the physics of the problem is much more powerful than actually trying to let a computer tell you what you get. Okay, so yeah, the same here, right? If I have it very small, no gradients, then it doesn't fracture at all. Now, something I should say is that for the lithium iron phosphate system, they brought it to very, very small sizes. Okay, and when they did that, because of the low diffusivities, they brought it to the point where it was intercalating uniformly. Okay, and that rose the efficiency enormously, and it also frustrated the phase transformation. Okay, basically, either the whole thing would phase transform from an iron phosphate in its entirety to a lithium iron phosphate fully lithiated particle, which helped a lot too. Okay, and you would never have these like two-phase systems in between, right? Either uniformly distributed with a fraction of the amount of lithium that you would expect it would have. And then, of course, you would not be able to crack it, or at least not as much. Okay? So people do take advantage of that. What is the catch? You want to make nano-sized particles, it's going to cost you more money, right? Because now you want to basically fabricate them at that size, which actually I don't think it's that hard these days. But you also have to make sure the health part of it, right? I don't know about you, but I don't know what happens if I breed one of those things. I don't want to try. And of course with other materials like lithium cobalt oxide, you know where I'm going with this. Yes, you have a question.
So in principle, you could have the same effect even if you have extremely thin films, like a monolayer.
Yes, if you have, it's tricky there though. Just to rephrase your question, you could in principle have the same effect on thin film systems, indeed, but only if the film is self-standing. The moment you deposited, especially if you deposited epitaxially against a substrate, then you have a problem, right? Why? Because it's going to start expanding or contracting, and the substrate is going to expand or contract, so you're going to develop there that, again, that lithium incompatibility or that lattice parameter incompatibility, which is really what we're trying to fight. Okay, and the moment you have a lattice parameter incompatibility, stress is developed, delamination occurs, and then the game is over. You have to find a way to release that strain. Okay, not release it into stress, but basically just release it to let it just basically spill out, right, laterally, without having any internal constraints or external constraints to that matter, right? And again, I guess the picture that I have in mind is if I have a substrate, and if I put a thin film of material on top, if I put lithium in, it's going to try to expand, right? But the substrate is constraining it. So if it can't expand, right, it's going to be enter a state of compression, right? It can't expand. It's trying to do it, but it can't. So the substrate is basically pushing it back in. So what you will have here is that the substrate is going to be in tension and the film is going to be in compression, right? And most likely what will happen is you will have delamination somewhere there. Okay, or you do it the other way, right? Now I'm taking lithium out, so this thing enters, with respect to the substrate, right, enters a state of compression, right? And of course you can always play games, which is what the semiconductor industry does. You can put two of them together, right? That's a game you can play. You can put sandwiches of them. I mean, people in the semiconducting industry have been playing with multi-layer structures, right, to try to have a structure that is effectively stress-free. Right? There are all these games you can play. The 3D structures, if you think about it, have a huge potential in that sense because, well, you guys remember the structure we were drawing, right? Right? These are basically free to expand laterally. But of course, the moment you put one in here, then you have to account for now the mechanical coupling between them. Right, so there are all these things that now are part of that design. Okay, let's see how much time we have. Oh, we still have 5 minutes. Let's see. That's just a little cluster. This is just to show you that actually that coefficient beta that we've been talking about is not just a constant. Okay, it's actually a function of composition. Okay, this is you can see the lattice parameter A and the lattice parameter C of a unit cell of lithium cobalt oxide as you go from on the left from the lithiated state to the unlithiated state. And in between, you can see it goes all these structural transformations as it goes through. On the right, you can see on the left, you can see the unlithiated state, and on the right, the lithiated state. And the slope of those curves is the beta coefficient, the Weigert coefficient that we're talking about. So you can see there are regimes where the rate of expansion is zero. Okay? And then you're going to hit compositions where that rate is going to rise up, and then it could even change signs as you go through the different lithiating stages. Okay? Or in the other case, as you can see in the other axis, right, actually you can see it's flat, and then comes back down, and then comes back up, right? You can see, well, on the top part it's pretty much flat, but in this case, along the c-axis, you can see you have these large variations, right? And that can certainly impact on not only the local stresses, but actually in what direction you should expect a fracture to occur in your system. That's the lithium cobalt oxide system. The graphite system does this something similar. Also, you go through different lithiating stages. You hit different phases as you go through different compositions. And you can see here on the left, you can see the in this case, the lattice parameter distance along the c-axis. On the right, you can see the expansion percent. And you can see that it's quasi-linear from 0 to 0.4 state of charge. Okay, then it reaches a plateau, and then it expands again to reaching around 11.6, roughly 12% when it's fully lithiated. Okay? So, and actually you can see even the slides are the slopes are different, right, as you go from one stage to the other one. So it can really make a huge deal, right, as to how it's impacting. Just to wrap this up, well, this is just the voltage, the corresponding voltage, so you can see that in this case, the plateau that you have there from LIC18 to LIC12 corresponds to that other plateau you have there. So lattice parameter and the actual potential, they're tightly coupled, right? And it shouldn't be surprising, since as you go from one stage to the other one, you're really phase transforming your material as you're putting lithium in it. If you think about it from the thermodynamic point of view, you're basically going from one side of the phase diagram to the other one, right? Sampling different phases at different equilibria until the system becomes actually, you have a two-phase system, right? And you could have these compositional domains in the system as you go. So, that of course is when you're looking at one particle. Okay? Now, just to make it just a little bit more complicated, now you have, since you know that the cathode is changing at some rate and the anode is changing at a different rate, what happens to the entire cell system, right? You have your lithium cobalt oxide that when you discharge it is going from fully lithiated to compressed down by 12% as you delithiate it, right? And the lithium manganese oxide is going from being delithiated to growing to expanding by 6%. Okay, so just to try to draw a cartoon for that, I'm going to erase this bit. This is my C6, LiMn2O4. I am recharging, so I take my lithium from here and put it over here. So this is going to expand by 12%. This one is going to shrink by 6%. Okay? Try to stitch it mechanically. Right? I go the other way, right? Or I can start my initial lithiated state, or my initial state is LiC6, and I have an MN204, just looking at the extreme situation. So it is lithiated, and as I take the lithium out, it's going to contract by 12%, and this one is going to expand by 6%. Okay? So even the initial state of the battery will determine how the whole thing is going to expand and contract. And it becomes like an accordion, right? I put lithium in there, it expands, right? I put lithium back here, it expands too, right? I put a lithium out there, It expands, and this one contracts. So it's like the system is breathing in and out, right? It's trying to accommodate the lithium, right? Just like when you breathe, you basically your thorax expands and then contracts, right? The same, but in this case, between two sides, right? It breathes out and breathes back in, right? As it takes the lithium in and out, and the same on that side. And the separator, well, the separator is just in this case a passive device where material is just going through. Okay, so. Yeah, you can see it can, at that point it just gets very complicated, you know. It's, and this is, of course, on top of the stuff that we've been describing, right? What this is showing you, for example, the first row is lithium cobalt oxide against graphite, and you can see how the entire cell would change by different amounts as you put one type of material on top of another one, right? It's not the same to have lithium cobalt oxide and graphite, then lithium iron phosphate and graphite. You can see that overall there's a 1.7% change of lithium iron phosphate and a 7% change, which it seems to be the worst of all of them for what is done in this table. This is a table assembled in a paper by Yedming Chang, right? And you can see down there I have an interesting, probably the most interesting one will be, I guess, lithium cobalt oxide against lithium titanium oxide. And you can see that one, there's a net change, macroscopic change of only 0.9%. Why is this important macroscopically? Well, because you have to actually attach the system, put a back contact back here, and you have to encapsulate the whole thing, right? So, you want it or not, you still have these additional mechanic constraints from the package in which you put your battery in, right? And that will end up also playing a role. So, you can then fracture your battery there too. So, then you also have to account for the material selection, not only from a point of view of how much charge you put in it, okay, and what is the power density you're going to deliver, but how are you going to package it so that the stresses do not also drop your coulombic efficiency of the system, okay? Okay, I will post these slides, I'm hoping sometime today. I think I already ran over. I think this is all I got. Yeah. Oh yeah, there's a couple of other ones, but I'm already past my time. But this is all I got. I hope you had fun. Next week, I'm looking forward to seeing your projects. I'll be in my office all day on Monday. If you want to discuss any possible issues that you may have to develop your projects, please by all means drop by. Send me an email. I've also been getting phone calls from the people from Crane. It's much easier. To talk face to face at this point of the semester than via email, because in many cases when I get a whole long description, it takes at least half an hour to just try to type back, right? So, and well, since a working day has so many hours, right, by the time the day ends, I just didn't have a chance to help everyone, right? So, please do call me. The information is also on the website. Drop by, right? I'm very happy to discuss whatever issues you may have or whatever questions or even complaints you may have regarding the project. On Tuesday, we will do the exact same thing we did last time. Be prepared to present. I would appreciate you guys volunteering, right? If not, well, we can also make it random and then assign someone, right? But rather that if you want to present sooner, then rather than later, that you do that. Probably one advantage to do it sooner is that gives you time. Especially if you present tomorrow, that on Friday when the project is due, you have that enough time to actually make corrections depending on the oral feedback that you receive on Tuesday and Thursday. Okay, well, thank you guys, and we'll see you next week.